A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's back from 3 weeks in the US with Hannah and Ezra, visiting the grandparents in Connecticut. Wonderful trip. Also, and he's very clear about this, the most grueling long-haul slog they've ever done. The outbound went through Dubai, which is a geographic shrug at best. The return had a day-long layover in Athens, where the airport was basically a brick oven. And the last leg came with a 20-kilo checked bag limit, so every packing decision upstream had to work backward from that number. They're carrying a safety chair, a fold-away stroller, a 14-month-old who's himself about 10 kilos of wriggling cargo, and a handheld luggage scale that, when they actually needed it, turned out to be lying to them. Take something out of the bag and it reads heavier. So Daniel's got two questions. One, are these handheld scales actually reliable, or is there a fold-away platform scale that does the job better? Two, how do you distribute weight across personal items, backpacks, and checked bags so you don't get destroyed by fees or feel like you're wading through a swamp in body armor? And underneath both of those, there's the thing he said about pre-planning the carry, sitting down with Hannah beforehand and working out the whole strategy. That instinct is the thread we should pull.
The broken scale is the perfect entry point here. Because it's not just a piece of gear that failed, it's a measurement device that introduced more uncertainty than it resolved, and that's the whole problem in miniature.
A device whose only job is to tell you the truth, and it can't even do that.
Right. And Daniel's experience, take something out, the number goes up. That's not a freak occurrence, that's a known failure mode of cheap load cells. So let's start with what's actually inside these things. Most handheld luggage scales use a single point strain gauge load cell. It's a small metal block with a resistive element bonded to it. When you hang weight from it, the metal deforms microscopically, the resistance changes, and the electronics convert that to a weight reading. When it's new and the load is perfectly vertical, it's reasonably accurate. Wirecutter tested the Etic City Apex back in 2024, their top pick, and it was accurate within a tenth of a pound across more than 50 trials. That's good.
And that's the one Daniel should buy.
Well, hold on. Travel and Leisure and CNN underscored both note the same thing, cheaper models drift. After 10 or 15 uses, the strain gauge starts to deform permanently. The calibration shifts. And the other problem, the one that probably explains what Daniel saw, is off-axis pull. If you're lifting a soft-sided duffel by a fabric handle, the strap is rarely pulling straight down. It's pulling at an angle. That introduces what's called cosine error. The measured force is the vertical component only, and bending moment error, where the load cell is being twisted slightly as well as pulled. Cheap scales don't compensate for this. The reading jumps around because the actual force vector at the sensor is changing moment to moment.
So you're standing at the check-in counter, sweating, lifting a bag that's swinging slightly, reading a number that's bouncing between 18 and 22 kilos, and you're supposed to make a packing decision based on that.
And Daniel's specific symptom, remove an item, weight goes up. That's classic off-axis inconsistency. He probably lifted the bag at a slightly different angle the second time, or the strap was twisted differently, and the load cell registered it as more force, not less.
What about the fold-away platform scale idea? He asked if there's a better option that packs flat.
Same technology, different form factor. A platform scale still uses load cells, often four of them, one in each corner, but the fundamental physics don't change. You're still measuring a dynamic load. The bag sits on the platform, it's not perfectly centered, the weight distribution inside the bag shifts, and you get the same kind of variability. The real upgrade isn't a different shape, it's a scale with a swiveling hook. A 360-degree swivel reduces off-axis error dramatically because the hook self aligns with the force vector. Some digital scales also auto-calibrate before each weigh, which helps with drift. But the deeper point is that the scale is a red herring.
Say more.
The scale is the verification tool. It's the last step. The real problem Daniel is describing is that he was trying to hit a weight target without knowing the weight of individual items. You can't manage what you haven't measured, and he hadn't measured anything before leaving the house. So the solution isn't a better scale. It's a packing strategy that makes the scale almost unnecessary. Pre-weigh the empty bags. Know the tare weight of every bag you're taking. Weigh individual items, or at least categories of items, before you pack. Use a spreadsheet or an app to sum everything. By the time you get to the airport, the scale is just confirming what you already know within a few hundred grams.
Daniel said he intended to sit down with Hannah and figure out the strategy. That's the right instinct. The scale is the last 5% of the process, not the first 90.
And here's the thing about luggage scales that nobody talks about. You're measuring a bag that's been packed on a bedroom floor, then carried downstairs, then loaded into a car, then dragged across a parking lot. The contents settle. Clothes compress. The weight distribution inside the bag is completely different from when you packed it, so even an accurate scale is measuring a slightly different object than the one you weighed at home.
The bag is a dynamic system, and we're treating it like a static one.
Yes. And that's actually a good transition to the bigger question, the weight distribution across bags and bodies, because the bag is dynamic, and so is the person carrying it.
All right, let's go there. Daniel's second question, how do you distribute weight across personal items, backpacks, and checked bags so you don't get wrecked by fees or by your own spine?
The airline's logic and the human body's logic are two completely different things. The airline treats each bag as an independent unit with a weight limit. The body treats the total load as a single distributed system with a center of mass. The mistake is optimizing for the airline's categories independently, making sure each bag is under its limit, without thinking about how all those bags interact when they're on your body. So the first principle is, treat the whole system as a single load with a total weight budget, then allocate weight to maximize comfort and minimize fees.
And the toddler is part of the load.
The toddler is the wild card. A 14-month-old is roughly 10 kilos, but it's 10 kilos that shifts location constantly. One minute he's on your hip, the next he's on your shoulders, the next he's squirming to get down and run toward the duty-free. The stroller adds another 7 to 10 kilos. The safety chair adds 4 to 5. These are non-negotiable weights. They have to move through the airport. So the negotiable weight, clothes, toiletries, entertainment, snacks, has to be ruthlessly minimized. Wirecutter's 2024 Guide to Travel Gear for Toddlers makes this point explicitly. The single biggest weight saver is a compact, lightweight stroller that fits in the overhead. But even that creates a carry burden because now you're carrying a stroller through the airport instead of pushing it.
Daniel mentioned looking into folding platform trucks that could fit in the overhead, then realized it might count as another personal item.
And it would. Anything with wheels that isn't your child's stroller is going to be counted as a bag by most airlines. Plus, a platform truck solves one problem, moving heavy things across flat ground, but creates another, now you're carrying a platform truck upstairs, onto shuttle buses through security. It's a solution that adds weight to solve a weight problem.
The physics of this is actually interesting. Let's talk biomechanics for a minute. Daniel said he felt like he got a week at the gym from just the last day. That's not an exaggeration. It's a real physiological response to asymmetric loading.
Right. Picture the typical airport movement pattern. Toddler on one arm, backpack on both shoulders, stroller in the other hand, rolling suitcase trailing behind. That's asymmetric loading on the spine, the shoulders, and the lower back. The body is constantly making micro adjustments to maintain balance, and those adjustments require muscle activation. Over hours, that's cumulative fatigue. The solution isn't a platform truck, it's a deliberate weight distribution strategy. Heaviest items go in the rolling suitcase, because the ground bears the weight through the wheels. The toddler goes on the front, center of mass over the feet, not off to one side. The backpack gets the lightest, most frequently accessed items, snacks, diapers, entertainment. You want the thing you're reaching into every 20 minutes to be the thing that weighs almost nothing.
So the rolling suitcase is the mule. The backpack is the quick access pouch. And the toddler is the toddler.
The toddler is the load you can't optimize away, but you can optimize how you carry him. A front carrier, even for a 14-month-old, if he'll tolerate it, keeps the weight centered and frees up both hands. If he won't tolerate it, you alternate arms every 10 or 15 minutes. That sounds trivial, but it's the difference between unilateral fatigue and bilateral fatigue, and the body handles bilateral load much better over time.
And then there's the heat. Daniel mentioned the Athens airport felt like an oven. That's not just uncomfortable, it's a physiological multiplier.
Heat increases perceived exertion by roughly 15 to 20% for the same physical load. The mechanism is straightforward. Your body diverts blood flow to the skin for cooling, which reduces oxygen delivery to working muscles. So a 10-kilo load in a hot airport feels like 12 kilos. Now add sleep deprivation from a red-eye flight. Now add the asymmetric loading we just talked about. Now add the cognitive load of navigating an unfamiliar airport in a language you may not speak, with a child who's also hot and tired. The last day felt like a week at the gym because the cumulative metabolic load was enormous. It wasn't just the weight, it was the weight multiplied by heat, multiplied by fatigue, multiplied by stress.
And multiplied by the broken scale, which added decision fatigue to the physical load.
The scale wasn't just a measurement failure, it was a cognitive load multiplier. Every time the number jumped, Daniel had to make a new decision. Do we repack? Do we risk the fee? Do we throw something away? Those decisions have a metabolic cost, too.
So the practical question becomes, at what point is it worth just paying the overweight fee and being done with it?
That's the question Daniel didn't ask, but it's the one that underlies everything. The cost of repacking at the check-in counter. The time, the stress, the arguments, the sweat, the risk of missing your flight, that has a real value. If the overweight fee is $50 and the repacking costs you 20 minutes of stress and marital friction in a hot airport, the fee is cheaper. Daniel's broken scale is almost a feature, not a bug. It forced him to confront the fact that precision at the margin isn't worth the effort. You can't optimize to the gram when you're traveling with a toddler. The system is too dynamic.
Accept the uncertainty. Budget for the fee. Move on.
And that's not defeatism. That's recognizing that the airline's precision demand is a fiction. Which brings us to something worth examining. What are those per-bag weight limits actually for?
I've always assumed it's a safety thing. The plane can only carry so much.
That's what most people assume. But the weight and balance calculation for an aircraft is done on total cargo mass, not per-bag mass. The plane doesn't care if one bag is 23 kilos and another is 18, as long as the total is within limits. The per-bag limit is partly about protecting baggage handlers. A 30-kilo bag is a workplace injury risk, but it's also a pricing mechanism. It creates a boundary where fees can be charged. And the boundary is enforced inconsistently because the enforcement itself is a workflow decision, not a safety decision.
So the scale isn't measuring a physical constraint. It's measuring a pricing boundary.
Yes, and a broken scale that makes the boundary illegible. That's not just a nuisance, it's revealing something about the system. The boundary is arbitrary, the enforcement is inconsistent, and the traveler is trying to optimize against a target that keeps moving.
Daniel's broken scale as a kind of accidental truth teller.
I think that's exactly right. It stopped giving him a number he could optimize against, and in doing so, it exposed how much of the optimization was futile to begin with.
All right. Let's bring in Hilbert. He's been quiet back there.
I know that look. Hilbert, what have you got?
23 kilos.
Go on.
That was the limit at Gatwick when I worked baggage. 1996 and 97, summers, I was on the heavy bag team. Anything over 23 kilos got a red tag and went to us. We'd haul it off the belt, put it on a separate cart, and wheel it to the aircraft by hand. The belt can take 30 kilos easy. The plane can take far more than that. The limit was for us, the handlers, and for the check-in agents who had quotas.
Quotas.
Every agent had a target for excess baggage fees. Not officially. But if you weren't hitting your numbers, your supervisor had a word. So a bag that was 1 or 2 kilos over? Nothing. The belt can take it. The plane can take it. The weight and balance sheet is calculated on total cargo mass. Nobody's weighing individual bags on the ramp. But 5 kilos over? That's when the tag comes off and you're rebooking it on the next flight. I saw families miss connections over 4.7 kilos because the agent had a quota to hit and the bag was the bag that put them over.
4.7.
The scale at the check-in desk reads to one decimal place. 4.7 is a number. 23.0 is a number. The difference is a fee or a missed flight, and it's completely arbitrary. The same bag on a different agent's shift goes through.
So the per-bag limit is a pricing fiction, not a safety limit.
Always was. The aircraft weight and balance sheet works on total cargo mass across all holds. They don't weigh individual bags after check-in. They use standard passenger weights too, 88 kilos for men, 70 for women, 35 for children. Those haven't been updated since the 90s. The whole system runs on estimates and averages. The per bag limit is the one place they insist on precision, and it's the one place precision doesn't matter.
Because that's where the money is.
That's where the money is. I've still got the red tag from my last shift. It's in a box somewhere.
So Daniel's broken scale, the one that wouldn't give him a consistent reading, that's actually a more honest representation of the system than a calibrated check-in scale.
The check-in scale is calibrated. It's accurate. It just doesn't measure anything that matters for safety. It measures whether you pay.
The handheld scale that can't hold a reading. That's measuring a dynamic load with a cheap sensor. But it's also refusing to pretend the boundary is fixed.
I wouldn't trust a handheld scale for anything. I weigh my bag on the bathroom scale at home. Stand on it, read your weight, pick up the bag, read the combined weight, subtract. Bathroom scales are consistent enough for that. The difference between 22 and 23 kilos doesn't matter anyway, because the agent might waive it or might not, and you can't control which agent you get.
The strategy is, get close, don't obsess, and budget for the fee.
The strategy is, don't be the person repacking on the floor at the check-in counter. Everyone in the queue hates that person. The agents hate that person. And you're not going to fix a 4-kilo overage by moving a pair of shoes to your carry-on. You're just going to make your carry-on heavier and your back worse.
The cost of precision exceeds the cost of the fee.
Every time. Unless you're moving gold bars. Are you moving gold bars?
Not typically, no.
Then pay the $50.
Hilbert, you've just reframed the entire discussion. The scale isn't measuring a physical constraint. It's measuring a pricing boundary. And the boundary is enforced by agents with quotas, not by physics.
Which means the broken scale is a kind of liberation. It prevents you from optimizing against a fiction. You can't game a number that won't hold still, so you stop trying to game it and start thinking about what actually matters, which is getting your family through the airport without collapsing.
Where does that leave Daniel's original question? Are handheld scales reliable? Some are, some aren't. But the question is less important than he thought. How do you distribute weight? Heaviest in the wheeled bag, lightest in the backpack, toddler-centered on the body, and accept that heat and fatigue are multipliers you can't eliminate. You can only plan around them.
The pre-planning instinct is the right one. Sit down with Hannah before the trip. Weigh the empty bags. Weigh the non-negotiable items, the stroller, the safety chair. Build the packing list from the weight budget, not from the item list. If the numbers don't work, you know before you leave the house, not at the check-in counter. The scale is just a verification step at the end.
If the verification step fails because the scale is cheap or the bag is swinging or the angle is wrong, you're still within a kilo or two of your target, and you've already decided that a kilo or two is within the margin you're willing to pay for.
The real innovation isn't a better scale. It's a better understanding of what you're actually carrying and why.
Which brings us to an open question. If per bag weight limits are pricing fiction, should travelers optimize against them or ignore them? The answer depends on what you're optimizing for. If you're optimizing for money, you play the game. You weigh, you redistribute, you try to hit the number. If you're optimizing for peace of mind, you get close. You budget for the fee, and you walk through the airport with your spine intact and your marriage intact and your toddler not screaming. Those two goals are often in direct conflict.
The conflict is about to get sharper. Airlines are moving toward dynamic pricing for baggage, pay per kilo, not per bag. When that becomes standard, the scale becomes more important, not less. Every gram has a price. But the human cost, the physical strain, the stress, the arguments on the airport floor, that doesn't change. The scale gets more precise, but the body doesn't.
The body is still carrying a toddler through a hot airport on 4 hours of sleep. No scale fixes that.
No scale fixes that. The only thing that fixes, it's accepting that you're going to pay something. In fees, in fatigue, in frustration, and planning for that payment rather than trying to avoid it entirely.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumentop for producing, and for the Gatwick perspective that turned the whole premise inside out.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you've got a travel disaster story or a packing strategy that works, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
The thanks for listening to our show. My weird promise, where odd thoughts go, from sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.